My name's Roy Pumphrey. I speak for Stop Hinckley, which is a campaign to do all it can to stop completion of Hinckley C on the basis that we would save £50 billion in additional cost for electricity if we stop now, even if we had to pay EDF to just go away. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm happily retired. And this one of my chief interests is working for Stop Hinckley.
Okay, so what was your job, if you don't mind me asking beforehand? Have you got any kind of expertise in engineering or in the nuclear or anything?
None whatsoever, no. But I've got a teaching and lecturing in agriculture and various other things around, also fringe things around that. But I'm not the nuclear technology expert, but I can tell you a bad deal when I see one, and this is a bad deal. So that's an interest in that. And
so why is it a bad deal from the start, Hinckley?
Because of the price that's been set for the electricity that consumers will have to pay if they ever get it to work. There's a currently over £112 per megawatt hour, where offshore wind is coming in at £40 a megawatt hour and can only get cheaper, whereas Hinckley's electricity can only get dearer, because that £112 is index linked for 35 years of the station working if it ever does.
In the last few days, we've been hearing about an enormous increase in the number of workers down at Hinckley. I suppose that is kind of good news. It shows that maybe that the workload is increasing down there. We're getting somewhere closer to completion.
No. They've put back their earliest estimate of a completion date. This is a last desperate throw of the dice to throw a lot more people at the job in the hope they can make up the time they've lost for all the reasons they've put forward why they are so far behind schedule.
Okay, so they're looking to go from around about 5,500 up to 8,500 workers. That's another 50% extra. It's half as many workers down there again.
That's right.
What's the significance, though? Because you're saying that you think that they're so slow in completing it that they've had to bring these extra workers in?
Well, things aren't, they've been, as ever, over-optimistic about how quickly they could get things done and underestimated the complexity of what they're trying to do. Because all of these things are a guinea pig. There is no template. This is not like cars rolling off a production line. For all that they say about this being a similar design to elsewhere, when it comes to building one of these things, they are so complex that the problems that are thrown up on any particular site are particular to that site. And that's what they're finding at Hinckley Point.
Okay, so as I understand, it's EDF, which is a big French company. Are the Chinese still helping finance Hinckley C?
Yes, it's glorious. It's being built two-thirds by the French government and one-third by the Chinese government.
And that means, I think, doesn't it, that these sorts of reactors are being used elsewhere in Europe, in France and Finland, and also already up and running in China. So at least we know that this is going to work once they switch it on.
Well, no, we don't, because whilst the ones in China are supposed to work, there's very little external observation about what goes on in China. What we know for a fact is that they haven't been able to get it to work in Finland or France.
Oh, dear. Well, look, hang on. But they have got it working in China. I suppose they would say that, well, this is, confidential. China is, authoritarian state, and we're not going to let you just come and wander around our reactors and see if it's going OK.
Well, that's what they are. They have got Chinese workers here at the moment, and one can only anticipate they will have to get some more in if they're the people that have been able to get one to work.
Okay, so it's two-thirds French-funded, it's a third Chinese-funded. How many actual local workers are there? Because one imagines that maybe quite a lot of these 8,500 workers are from those countries.
It's very hard to say. partly because EDF makes its description, its definition of what a local worker is somebody who's within 90 minutes drive time of one of their park and rides. Their park and rides are on the M5, just east of the site and around Bridgewater, and they're going to open a new one near Taunton. And 90 minutes drive time means people can come and work, obviously from Bristol, but clearly from as far away as Cardiff and as far south as Plymouth, because both of those are within 90 minutes drive time of one of the park and rides where the workers congregate and get on the buses that take them from the M5 to the site of the power station.
Okay, what about the cost overruns? Because I understand that's also been in the news too. This is one of those projects that every time we hear about it, it's getting more and more expensive.
Yeah. It's predictable as night following day. Okay, that there are always things that crop up when they're building one of these that they didn't expect that to happen. And £500 million is, when you remember the initial estimate of how much this would cost was £8 billion. And now they're talking about at least £23 billion. I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like HS2. One does wonder if they kind of sign these contracts at the beginning, knowing that the real profit margins are going to be going out. And EDF have put out a profit warning in the French Stock Exchange.
I believe that's what the purpose of the announcement about the cost overrun and the delays in completion. But they're still looking to make 7% profit on the project. And when you think how much your interest pays on a savings account, the prospect of getting a 7% return strikes one on something as fixed as electricity is really too highly. That's why there are no British investors, because nobody in the City of London could believe that this wasn't too good to be true.
I can remember the a few months ago, the British government said we're pulling out of using Huawei technology, this Chinese technology in our telecoms network, and yet it seems we're happy to use the Chinese technology and the Chinese finance in something as sensitive as generating nuclear power.
It's incredible. Absolutely unbelievable. The Chinese Chinese policy is to state claims in critical infrastructure so that they have a hold over what happens in the countries they've invested in. They happily admit that the investment they've made in oil drilling in other countries is so that they have some sort of say and control over what goes on with critical parts of a country's supplies and the infrastructure there that depends on.
So we've heard about the extra workers needed and the cost overrun. What about the time? That seems to keep shifting too. It's almost like one of those cartoons we used to watch when we were kids, as someone gets closer and closer to the cliff, and then you look away and you look back, and they're getting closer and closer to the cliff again. What they're doing is they seem every time to say, "Oh no, it's going to be, it's going to take longer and longer." In fact, it seems to almost be receding as fast as time is passing. So it may never get finished. But anyway, what's the latest?
Well, the latest is that far from the 2025 mantra, which EDF have been parroting for the last 5 years, the slip is to the middle of 2026 at the earliest. And in some respects, it's much more likely to be 2027 or even longer, because they admit that the pandemic has caused delays. And that, of course, was unforeseeable, but everything as far as EDF is concerned is unforeseeable. A year or two ago, they were blaming faults in the geology of the site, which has been there for millions of years, as something they hadn't expected. They just stumbled over all the rocks and things weren't as they were expecting them to be. Well, basic surveying should surely have told them what sort of geology they were going to have to deal with. But no, it was a surprise.
What about The big $64,000 question, I can remember we chatted to Dr. Chris Busby a few months ago, maybe it was actually probably quite old, maybe almost a year ago, about Hinkley. And he was suggesting that it might just be a kind of Ponzi scheme where the contractors are pulling money down all the time, and at some point they're just going to pull out. Do you think it will ever actually be finished? And how close are we? I mean, for example, is the reactor actually in there now? Is the reactor pressure vessel, has that arrived?
No, they're slowly putting the rings by which they construct the pressure vessel. They're starting to stack those up. But they're still, 6 years away from getting anything complete. And even when it's built, they've still got to make it work. There was a nuclear power station in Bulgaria that sat there for 25 years, complete, but never generated a single kilowatt hour of electricity. 25 years, and then they just took it apart.
So when it comes by 26, 27, 28, whenever it actually happens, do you think it will actually finally be switched on?
Oh, I'd be surprised. Unless they can get the Finnish or the French one to work reliably sometime soon, and they've shown no sign of actually being able to do that, I'll be surprised. The one in Finland, they've been saying for years, oh, yes, we'll have it working in the next year, 6 months, whatever, but they're still not there. Still.
Okay, so what about what's been happening at Sizewell? Because I understand that there's some kind of talk about, this is another nuclear power station in the east of England, that I understand that they're talking about it being so expensive that there will have to be a kind of general tax on all electricity from the whole country that will go to Sizewell. Is there a similar sort of scheme for Hinkley? Because this seems a bit unfair on those who are trying to just buy their electricity from renewable sources.
It is, absolutely. I mean, the government's get out over Hinkley is to say that whenever EDF announce cost overruns and delays, that's not a problem for us because we're not funding the build. OK, we're just paying for electricity if and when it ever delivers any electricity. So to that extent, you know, why should we worry about EDF's problems with building it? Because it's no skin off our nose. But all that time, the cost of electricity is increasing with the index linkage that's attached to the generous price that was set, where are we now? 6 or 7 years ago. And inflation can only go on adding to that. Sizewell C is a different matter because the government realized it had been stitched up over the price of electricity deal for Hinkley C. So it was determined not to fall into that elephant trap again. So it's looked at something called regulated asset base, which is all about, it's used for things like giant new sewer systems and things like that. Fairly straightforward bits of infrastructure where you pay a small amount extra on your sewage bill. And before long, they construct the thing. And that surcharge is gone because it's built, it's up and running, and it's usually beneficial to have got something new, improved and working. But nuclear power isn't like that, because all nuclear power does is run for a while, and then when it's finished, you've got the problem of what to do with the radioactive waste. And that's another aspect that still isn't sorted, because the radioactive waste from Hinkley C, we ever get that far, and from Sizewell, which is an even more remote possibility, is much more radioactive than what we've had to deal with up till now. It will have to sit on the site for 60 years before it can be moved anywhere. And then the big question is, where will it all go? Because no one knows. We were told we would have some plan for a storage site for nuclear waste before any new power stations were built. Well, the government broke that. That was a promise made 10 years ago, and that promise has simply been broken.
What about Hinkley A and B? They are, what kind of power stations are they? Are they still operating? And are they going to have to go into mothballs with the waste from those kind of kept on site as a permanent kind of storage facility?
No, Hinkley A is been closed down for, we must be looking at 20 years. So the cost of decommissioning that one, we've had to bear that. How much are we talking about? £3 billion a year goes to paying for decommissioning defunct nuclear facilities, many of which are power stations. And Hinkley B is tottering on its very last legs before it gets closed down either this year or next. It may never, it's off at the moment, and it may never restart because it's got problems with the graphite blocks, which are part of it. There are blocks of graphite, which are part of the safety mechanism. They need that if they need to close it down rapidly. And that's now cracking. So they're having to close. It's way past its sell-by date anyway, but it will definitely close next year, if not this year. And then all we'll have to do is pay for the decommissioning.
Now, I put it to you that the only reason they're building Hinkley C is so they don't end up with what is effectively just a site of storage of nuclear waste, which is dangerous, and no one can go really do anything with that site forever. They feel like they want to keep the site going, so they're building this new power station so that people forget about the fact that all it is really now is a white elephant nuclear waste dump.
Well, no, there is some storage. There is some storage on both the A and the B station. But the most it's what they call intermediate level waste. It's not the most radioactive material. That's been all been shipped off to Sellafield and has been gone for some time. So you have low level waste, intermediate level waste storage, which is not a security risk as such. Although, you know, it is radioactive, and you wouldn't want your children playing with it. But there is no nuclear fuel in Hinkley C yet. So as of this moment, no, Hinkley C is just a building site, just a giant building site with enormous cranes and thousands of people, you know, scurrying all about the place. But there is nothing radioactive there at the moment.
What would you say to people that say, well, we've got to have nuclear simply because wind and solar can never deliver the actual, you know, megawatt power that we need to run, you know, industry, factories, that sort of thing? We need to have at least something that can do that, given that these old coal-fired power stations are going out of fashion.
Yeah, coal and gas have got to go, absolutely. But the renewables, firstly, things like offshore wind are growing dramatically. Onshore wind, if people would stop being so objectionable about the turbines on land, would be cheaper still. And the other thing about both solar and wind electricity, is that the electricity once generated can be stored. And what in fact may happen is that electric cars will become giant batteries which can store electricity when it's being produced by sun and wind, and then could put it back into the grid when the cars aren't wanting to go anywhere and there's a demand greater than what's being produced for electricity, greater than the solar and wind are actually giving out at that time.
What about tidal power? Because we've got in the Bristol Channel, we've got the most massive tidal reach, one of the biggest in the world. There's a massive volume of water going in and out of there twice a day. And, you know, in other countries, they have got those turbines in the sea there generating power the whole time. Now, it just seems to me as if, you know, someone who's stood as an engineer at the Hinkley Sea point can be kind of looking out to sea, imagining all the turbines under the sea doing the same job as that nuclear power station and producing none of the permanent waste and radiation.
Absolutely. If the government was putting some money into research and development for exactly what you've described, instead of wasting it on either big new nuclear or the small modular reactors, which are equally pointless, then we'd be much nearer being able to say, yes, we can do without nuclear altogether.
OK, Roy Pomfrey, from Stop Hinkley. Thanks very much for joining us.
A pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
And can you just finish by plugging your website, how people can join you and how people can follow you?
Yes. Okay. You can see what stophinkley.org. Please go and or just search, Google Stop Hinkley and the website will come up. And there's all the stuff about Stop Hinkley as an organisation, the things that we think should be happening, our concerns about things like Hinkley C and nuclear waste, and a case for renewables, which is what we're about.
Final question. Can you just give us an idea of how you think that the development of Hinkley C has been covered by the national and the regional press?
Variably. What does concern me is that it is too easy for local media just to pick up the press releases and the publicity and the spin that EDF produce on a conveyor belt and accept that unchallenged. We put out counters to things that EDF says, and yet we find that that's not always. In fact, it's rarely easy to get media to take that on board. There have been one or two honourable exceptions, and that's why I'm very pleased to come and talk to you this evening. But by and large, and once people have printed the EDF press release, they seem reluctant to add anything onto that, which puts a different point of view.
Fascinating, Roy. Well, they should, if they're journalists, they should certainly not be cutting and pasting EDF press releases into their newspapers and things like that. But thanks for this, a bit of an insight there. Thanks very much for joining us.
That's okay. Thank you very much, Tony.